Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello and welcome to Made by Mamas, the podcast. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Georgia.
And we're here talking all things parenthood. You know, the real conversations.
Tips and tricks.
Products we love.
And brands we can't live without.
Let's get into it. Well, we're in the middle of half-term hell. How's it going?
We're good. And you're actually going to be away skiing, which is wonderful. So when you're listening to this, picture Zoe down the slopes, having a wonderful time.
Luna and Kitten Ski School. So basically, we've been once before with them. And I was really unsure as to how they would take it because Kit was only three at the time. And I thought it's quite little. And I was worried about them getting cold and all that stuff. But to be honest with you, they loved it. You know, they're both really active kids anyway. They just did 2.5 hours of ski school last time. This time, we've put them in for full days. So they start on the Sunday. They've got sort of 5 days. So it's like 2.5 hours in the morning. Then we go and get them for lunch. We have a really nice lunch with them. And then they go back in for the afternoon session. They wanted to do it. They are obsessed with it.
They'll love it as well.
Skiing has been a part of my life since I was three. So I just think now I can do it with the kids. It's magic.
It is. And I've just shipped mine off to my parents. So who's having the real holiday?
Actually, to be fair, that sounds awesome.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I've really got nothing to complain about. It's just wonderful. It's lovely. Me and James are having that week where it's like we're like a normal young couple.
Yeah.
You know, no kids, that kind of thing. We're working a week, but we'll be able to go out in the evenings. I actually might go to the gym like first thing in the morning.
Yeah, do it.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's all good. It's really nice. I love having this little break.
Yeah. And a very different half term to what we're used to as well, which is really nice. So yes, we're thinking of you. However, if you are in half term hell and you're already pulling your hair out, we're here for you. We've got a brilliant podcast for you today. We spoke to this incredible lady about a week ago now. And I think for both of us, it's really stayed with us because it was an incredibly powerful conversation, as in kind of rocks you to your core that things can get that bad with your kids. You know, we always joke about the kind of highs and the lows of things that we've been through. But, you know, the story that this woman told us was just, wow, mind-blowing.
Yeah, and I think as well, like, we talk about sort of young children on here quite a lot, don't we? And we kind of, when we think about the teenage years, we're always joking around, like, oh gosh, you know, they're going to hate us and they're going to lock themselves in their room, or, you know, oh God, what are they going to be drinking? And actually, when you hear the guests talk about, you know, what happened with her and her daughter, it really puts everything into perspective. Yeah. And it really, like, it really woke me up actually to think, you know, if there are issues at school, if this is happening, or they start changing in behavior, all that kind of stuff, it is not something to ignore. Like, it's really not.
No.
Oh, God. I feel the same, though. It's really stayed with me. It's really stayed with me.
Yeah. And what she's done, I mean, we'll get into the conversation. Please stick around for it. But what she's done as a result of the trauma that her daughter went through is quite remarkable. A really inspiring lady. Please welcome to the podcast, Suzanne Alderson. Hello.
How are you, Suzanne? How are you this morning?
I'm about 10 days into that horrible cold that everybody seems to have, but I'm absolutely delighted to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me, especially this week, Children's Mental Health Week. It's really pertinent, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Well, we were so, so compelled to get you on once we read your email, heard a little bit about your story. We thought this is the place that we really want to have the conversation with you. So can you just tell us a little bit about, you know, the journey that's kind of got you today and what happened with your daughter?
Of course, yeah. It's a long, convoluted one. But in 2015, my daughter was 14. She was being bullied at school. And I didn't really understand what was going on. But we started to see little changes in her behavior, in her, you know, the way she responded. And after a while, I just thought, we're going to have to do something. We need to speak to the school. And she just said, Mum, you can't, you know, I mean, you've got children, you know what it's like. Yeah. They say, you can't go and talk to the teacher because everybody will know and everyone will point at me. And so we left it. And it came to a point where my husband and I just said, we've got to go and speak to the school. And he went and spoke to the school. So I hadn't broken her trust. And the school said, oh, yeah, no problem. We'll move the bullies from her class. This was just before the summer holidays. We were meant to go on a plane off on holiday. And she said, I can't go on a plane because there's too many people. We were going to a hotel. Is the hotel pool just for us? Well, no, obviously not. I can't go there then. So we ended up driving to France and spending a couple of weeks in the middle of nowhere and seeing nobody. And she kind of calmed down. And I think I got myself into a little bit of a space where I was like, right, okay, we've got this. School are going to change things. And the first day back, she said to me, and I'll never forget it, Mum, I've got this. And she was like clenching her fist, like, I've got this. And later that day, it was one of those days at school where they have assemblies all day, seemingly. And I got a phone call from her just before I was due to go and pick her up. And she was screaming down the phone at me. She'd gone to the toilets. She was beside herself. She couldn't speak. And she said, they're in my class. And what had happened was the school had forgotten to move them. And so all of the build up to this new term, this new opportunity to actually, you know, move forward from this had gone in that moment. And I think for her in that moment, I can't speak for her. But in that moment, that was it. You know, the authority, the people around her, the people that are meant to protect her, not only her parents, but school had let her down. And that was the beginning of a very fast descent in her mental health. So she stopped eating. She wasn't sleeping. I could hear her padding around upstairs at all hours of the day and night. And she couldn't leave the house. So she couldn't go to school. And then school were like, oh, what's going on? And, you know, I didn't have any answers. I didn't have any understanding of what it was that we were facing at that time. And so I went to see our GP with her, and he referred her immediately to CAMHS, which is the Child Adolescent Mental Health Service. And that was about a 9 to 12 week waiting list, which now if parents are listening and they're referred, I mean, that's phenomenally quick. And yet I still couldn't get my head around what we were meant to do for the next 9 to 12 weeks. How was I meant to support her? How was I meant to get her through?
Was she out of school at this point, Suzanne? So she wasn't. So that's it. She stopped school.
Basically, yeah. I think by the end of that first week, she went in on the first day, and then it became, you know, to the point where I was getting phone calls. She was out in the toilets more than she was in lessons. And then by the end of the week, that was it. She was like, I can't go back. I'm not going back. You can't make me.
And the bullies, had they been identified? Because I mean, were they girls? Were they boys? What was the setup with them, and had the school done anything apart from saying to you that they were going to do something? Had they had conversations with their parents? What was that support like?
No, there was no support at all. I think there was a sense that if they just continued, it would go away. Mm-hmm. And they did nothing.
I guess if we kind of go back to when you started noticing like small changes in Izzy's behaviour, What was she like before the bullying?
She was, and she is now, but she was, I'm going to get upset. She was amazing. She was full of life. She was a bit different. She was, because we're a bit different, you know, we're not run-of-the-mill people. We are different. And we'd always encouraged that difference. We'd always encouraged her to express herself. She's highly creative, you know, very visual, a brilliant artist, a great cook, an amazing seamstress. She's a creator. She's a maker of things. And, you know, I don't think that, I mean, particularly in schools, creativity isn't necessarily celebrated or recognized as a strength. but we always did. And so we'd see her. I mean, I did a talk last week and showed a photo of her with her, like she was about eight, and she'd got this moustache on her face that she put on, and she'd come down in my husband's dinner jacket and said, "Oh, I'm daddy, I'm going out for a meeting and started talking in his language. It was hilarious, and we still remember it. And yet, you know, the school didn't necessarily see that. And we'd, you know, we saw that, all of that sparkle just gradually go. And then when we went back to the GP, because I'd said I can't cope for, you know, 9 to 12 weeks, and he said, "We'll come back every week then." And to go from that young child with a moustache and a dinner jacket on to one who then asked if she could go in on her own, spoke to the doctor and told him that she had a plan to end her life imminently, which found out was that night, is just, you look as a parent, you stop and you look and you say, how did we get here?
Yeah.
Like, how do we get from that to this? Because we didn't change. And this isn't a kind of, oh, we were completely blameless, because we all have our part to play. Not that I'm at all for guilting parents, quite the reverse. But, you know, how did we get from that beautiful, bright, oh, just like buzzing little beauty to this? How did we get there?
She was going to end her life. That is absolutely huge. The worst nightmare for any parent. It must have been crushing for you to have that realization. And I mean, you tell us, how did that make you feel and what did you do?
I mean, crushing's a really good word, because I've never thought of it in that way, but it crushed, I think, a lot of things in that moment: hope, belief, my spirit, my belief in myself, my belief in our future. And I think I was just completely consumed with fear. And what on earth am I meant to do here? I don't know anybody who's ever been here, you know. And almost there was this sense that, well, young people don't want to end their lives, do they? Just like, you know, it was just making sense of the incomprehensible, and it in a vacuum, completely alone, nobody to talk to, nobody to say, do you know what? It's really hard, this, and you're going to judge yourself, and you're going to think that it's all your fault. And it's going to be, you know, it's going to be traumatic, you know, with a big T, trauma with a big T, but you can get through it. And that's kind of why I started PMH.
But it's just to sort of just go back slightly, I guess, did you feel angry? Like, you mentioned you blamed, you know, you blamed yourself and stuff like that. But did you feel angry that you, I guess, you were in this situation, when you had, you know, a daughter who was one way, and then something happened, some bullying at school, and then everything changed?
I think my go-to reaction at the time was blame for myself. Yeah. It was always, what did I do wrong? And how can I fix this? And I couldn't fix it. It wasn't something that I could, you know, do, change my behavior immediately and it would just go away. We were in this now. I did feel anger, but I realized early on that my emotional response really fed into her emotional response. So my anger, if I was going to feel that, I'd need to box it off, not in a kind of I'm not feeling it, but just there's a time and a place for me to process this.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important, because our emotional temperature can really reflect on our children, and how we regulate them, you know, is something I don't think that we're aware of, because we, you know, I mean, I can only speak for myself as a parent, but I definitely saw that she was a child, and I don't know, I just didn't even conceive that she would ever get to a point where, you know, bearing in mind we had a really close relationship, we talked a lot, but we'd never ever talked about those kinds of emotional responses. And in my fear of trying to fix this and shut it down and not turning into a thing, I didn't listen enough. And so what I learned very early on was that I had to stop talking and start listening.
The thing is, Suzanne, is so my sort of take on it, because my sister was really badly bullied at school, is that what started off as the trigger, which was the bullying, which was horrendous, led her to develop, you know, an issue with her eating, but she overate and she binged. it led to a whole host of confidence issues. You know, actually mental health wasn't really spoken of. She's 42 now. So back in the day, it wasn't really a thing that we discussed, but it was like, that was in the middle of the spider chart. And then everything came off it, you know, and there was a whole host of things. And suddenly, like you said, it became a mountain. So I imagine for you, you know, you said she stopped eating. What were the other side effects, or at least what was she going through, experiencing as a result of the bullying? You know, introversy and
yeah, it's really interesting actually. You asked that question. I'm really sorry to hear about your sister, and I hope that it's been something that has created a positive change in her life. Yeah,
it has. Yeah,
and I think
has.
That's important to say, isn't it? Because we talk about mental health, and it's always about how we can make it good, but we don't often talk about why it's bad but what we can do then about it. So I did a talk the other week with Dove. Obviously, the self-esteem project is their thing. And, you know, just tying mental health with body image is something that I don't think we do enough. And this isn't about eating disorders. This isn't about, you know, this is about how you see yourself as a person. And the things that made Izzy different, she's 6'1". She's got the most, athletic build. She's wonderful, physically, and I probably shouldn't actually even say that, but you know, it's that part of who she is was picked up on. And I think the key is that it's, you know, if we look at our body image, that's, you know, that is part of who we are. So what we look like, how we feel, becomes who we think we are. And actually, if your peers, who are so important for you know, that part of your brain that's always looking for safety, so your peers as a young person, you'll be looking to them and saying, what do you think? You know, so you see like loads of groups of girls all looking the same. Well, we look the same because there's safety in numbers, and I've decided that you're my safe person, I'm going to follow you. So if then your peers start to pick on things about you, at a time where your brain is growing and your hormones are flowing and you're coming into that period of your life where you discover who you are, then it really does sort of hit the core of you. And I think it challenges that. So as parents, we have such a vital role to play in being positive role models, not in terms of, you know, being perfect or anything like that, but just being okay with sitting with hard topics, sitting with, you know, the outcomes of these experiences, so that our children can go through them, because we can't go round them. We have to go through them, because if we try and go round them, what happens? We end up, you know, traumatized. We end up, you know, depending on what model you follow, mentally ill. You know, we end up having to deal with the consequences of the actions that may not be our own. They may be what somebody did to us, but we have to sit with that.
We'll be right back after this short break.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back to this episode of Made by Mamas. Now, where were we?
So you mentioned that you felt that you weren't listening when Izzy was targeted, that you were trying to, as we all would do, kind of fix, I need to fix my daughter, you know, worst nightmare being lived out. What was the turning point, or what made you think, right, I need to sit back and listen to her now? What does she need, rather than how can I make this better for her?
Well, I think it's sobering when a doctor phones you and says your child intends to end their life. And I think you just have to sit there and say, well, something's got to change here. And the only thing that I can change is myself. So the only thing that I had control over in a completely chaotic, uncertain experience was me and how I responded. So that's where I kind of started from. And another point came when we were told to get her back into school by the medical professionals that we were working with, who were brilliant. But they kept saying, you know, get her back into school. She needs routine. She needs to get back into school. And this refrain became actually re-triggering the whole time, because what it said was, there's something wrong with you as a person, and we're going to get you right, or right enough, and then we're going to put you back into the place that has traumatized you. And for me, that was like a light bulb moment. I was just like, No, we're not doing that. You know, we've been through, and I use the word trauma, and it is traumatic for parents when their children's mental health declines, or they self-harm, or they're depressed, or they attempt suicide, or all of the above. But it was a light bulb for me when it just said, this is a trauma. We're going to have to stop and change what we're doing. And we're going to have to approach this in a different way. And that's why Partnering Not Parenting, which is the approach that I developed to support her, came about, because I knew that actually parenting her in the way that I had before, which was compassionate, it was connective, but I wasn't as present necessarily as I should have been. You know, that wasn't going to work. So I had to do that. So stepping down from my authority over what her experience was, stepping down from my emotion, because she didn't have the capacity. She shouldn't have to take care of me wailing because I'm, you know, worried about my child, you know, all that sort of stuff. And then stepping down from my judgment and my authority, I couldn't tell her what she needed because this was her unique experience. And again, you know, it took some time and it took some, I'm not going to say bravery. I think it just took a bit of, come on, you've got, you know, this is alternative to what you expected. What you're doing isn't working. You need to do something different. And we just shut the world out and said, no, we're not going to listen to what you say a young person should be doing. We're not going to hear all of the things that we've seen and done that don't work anymore. We're not going to try and force her into those. We're going to be led by her, properly led by her. And that was the beginning where I changed and I started to listen more. And I think she changed because she knew she was being heard. And I think so much of poor mental health is when we are not heard. Our pain is not heard. The challenge isn't heard. Our needs are not heard. You know, and that's a human thing, isn't it? But it is definitely at the kind of heart, I think, of poor mental health.
I agree. Yeah. Yeah. So you sort of said like your approach changed from parenting to partnering, and you kind of were listening to what she wanted. So was she saying to you like, no, I don't want to go back to school. I want to, what was she sort of telling you that she needed?
I'm not sure she knew actually at the time what she needed. And I don't think she was explicit, because one of the things that I learned was that questions became obligations. So to ask her what she wanted or needed became, you know, that basically sent her nervous system into fight flight. And she just couldn't cope with
it.
It was too much. But her, you know, when you have a child who has gone from the effervescent energy that she had to, you know, not being able to get out of bed, not being able to look you in the eye, not being able to engage with the world. You know, it's funny. I can think back to those times, and I've probably blocked a whole load of them out. But, you know, when you've lost the light in somebody, you know, what is the thing that we have to do as human beings? I think the hardest thing we do as human beings is sit with somebody in their distress. And that's what I decided I was going to do. I'll sit with you in your distress. I can't fix this and I can't fix you because you are not broken. You're bruised, you're battered. You might be a little bit fragmented in parts, but you're not broken. And we will go through this together and we will lose a lot, but we will gain a lot as well.
And was she receptive to that? Because I imagine when you're in that place, you feel so isolated that you've built up so many walls to keep you, you know, putting one foot in front of the other, or as you said, actually maybe not even getting out of bed some days, that she might have been quite defensive when you said, you know what, actually, I'm going to stay. I'm just going to sit in this with you. What was her response?
I think her response was for quite a while, really? Are you? Because she'd been so let down.
Right.
Right.
Not directly. And of course, you know, we are loving, compassionate parents. And I think she'd probably say the same if she was here. But I think it was a case of she's been let down so much that when she got from all of her tools, she says in my book, actually, all of my tools, I'd used all my tools. I didn't have anywhere to go. So she was in a place where her trust level was so low. So it was really about consistent action. It was, how can I prove to you that when I'm feeling bad, I'm still going to behave in the same way? So even when I'm tired and not resourced emotionally, I'm still going to be consistent in what I've said I'm going to do. So I'm not going to force you back to school. I'm not going to ask the questions that pop into my head the whole time, which are, you know, what about your future? How are we going to manage if you haven't been to school? What are you going to do about exams? Oh my goodness, you've not got any friends, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And it was about me owning my emotional response, resourcing myself, taking care of myself, not avocados and bubble baths, but really going into the deep work, that hard work.
Sorry, that's funny. Yeah. Not avocados and bubble baths.
Oh, really? Did that not solve everything?
Well, apparently it does, apparently.
I fucking hate avocado anyway. I'm just saying it. I'm just putting it out there. It's fucking boring. It tastes like nothing. Anyway.
Oh, I love that. But that's the thing, isn't it? Everyone's like, oh, you know, go and have a bath. And it's like, this is not going to be resolved by a bath or an avocado.
No. How is your life and how are your relationships in that moment? Because your daughter has obviously felt very isolated, but so must you have. Like, as you know, maybe your friends who are parents that not going through the same things like you used to at the same times. How was it for you?
It was really isolating. Because, like I say, I didn't know anybody who had a child who self-harmed or who'd attempted suicide or even was depressed or had a problem with their mental health. Because, you know, we attribute any kind of poor mental health to, I think, to kind of, oh, it's a problem at school, or it's something that's fixable. It's a problem that's fixable. So I didn't have any context. And I used to sit in the CAMS waiting room, making eye contact with people, just hoping that they would just connect with me and just so we could go through this together. And it didn't really help that it was a shared waiting room with a physiotherapist. But anyway, I did keep trying to see whether I could get somebody to like make eye contact with me. But, you know, the friendship situation, I was really fortunate. I had one friend who used to bring round little roast potatoes that Izzy loved, and she would eat those, you know, and that would be her way of, you know, and she'd listen and she was great. But many friends, because of their own fear, because of their own worry, that manifested in fixing. Oh, have you, you know, can't you just get her to go to school? Or do you think it's because you didn't force her to come downstairs when she was seven? And I'm like, No, it's not. And also, thank you. I'm not commenting on your life. So please back off a little bit. Please don't comment on ours. You have no clue what we're going through.
I really want to talk to you about partnering, not parenting, because I know that you were doing the Google searches and that there was quite a lot of resources coming up for the teenagers, that there was a lot of stuff online that was there to help the child, but actually there wasn't anything really to help parents going through. And that's why you felt compelled to set up this amazing work that you're doing. Wow. Tell us a bit about it.
Thank you. That's really nice of you to say, actually. Thank you. I appreciate that. But it's not just me. It's a massive team. But anyway,
No, it's just you. It's just you.
It's just me. All the time. I did look for resources, and I actually reached out to by email. I spilled my guts in an email to a large charity and got nothing back. And I figured that if, you know, being vulnerable actually comes quite easily to me, but for other people, it probably wouldn't come quite as easily. So if they'd shared and they'd not got a response, then what did that do? It just reinforced that sense that in some way you were wrong. You'd caused this. It's your fault. And I think the shame of parents when their child's mental health is declining is something we don't talk about, because we all want to be, you know, we all want to look like you two and have, you know, not saying you've got perfect lives, but you know, you kind of, people want to have this, they've got this vision of what good parenting is like. And so for me, it was a case of, how can I support the parent? Well, actually at the time it's, how can I support my daughter? And then it was maybe what I need to do here is I need to think about how I can support parents, because there weren't any books at the time. You know, I wrote my book, Never Let Go, to try and support parents and to try and give a really real account of what it is like to go through it, but also what you are in control of, because we feel like we're not in control of a lot. And actually, yeah, we are. So Parenting Mental Health started as a Facebook group in 2016, about 9 months after Izzy first attempted suicide. And I just wanted to connect parents together. So we had about 300 parents at first, and then it grew and grew. We support over 35,000 now. We're a charity. We've got our charity status in 2020. And we support, skill and inform parents on how to parent their child through poor mental health, through partnering, not parenting. And yeah, my book Never Let Go was published by Penguin in 2020 as well. So out of amazing, the worst kind of pain, amazing, different, alternative, beautiful, wonderful connections have grown.
And the biggest question, and the one that we can't wait to ask, how is Izzy now?
Izzy is great. Izzy's 21.
Yes!
Yeah, Izzy graduated from university. So she was out of school for 2 years. She went to college and then she got a couple of unconditional places for university and she graduated last summer. And yeah, Izzy's great. Izzy's great.
Oh, well, that's the best. That's giving me goosebumps.
It is,
actually.
I know. And I was just going to say, we normally ask our guests to give their piece of advice to a new mum. But what would be your advice to a parent listening who is worried about their child's mental health?
Well, I think I've probably said it already, which is listen and don't fix. But I also think it's about connection. So connect, come and join Parenting Mental Health. We're lovely, we're friendly, we're non-judgmental, got heaps of experience. I think the point is that our children will feel emotion. That's what we are meant to do as human beings. Mm-hmm. How we can be emotionally aware ourselves, emotionally conscious ourselves, how we can start to become emotionally literate so that we cannot get triggered by, you know, meltdowns or shouting or anger. These are all natural emotions. Just try and be curious, look beyond what's going on and see what you might be able to find out about your child and how you can support them. And finally, your child's mental health is not a judgment on you, but if you can use it as a signal, then you can really help them. And this doesn't have to be a bad ending.
And you know what, Suzanne? We've got 5 kids between us, me and George. And I think I can speak for Georgia with this one, that we feel comforted knowing that there is something out there for us if it happens at some point. So thank you very much and continue the work that you're doing. It's amazing. You are wonderful. What a brilliant podcast. Thanks a million for coming on.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
It's really difficult, isn't it, to know what to say when you hear a story like that. I mean, it's so wonderful that, you know, we got to hear a happy ending and that everything, you know, has worked out. But it's really, really scary how that can happen. And you just cannot imagine as parents how it feels. And also as well, like, you know, yes, of course, you know, the person going through it is absolutely horrendous for, and you know that they need to get help and all of that kind of stuff, but parents, like, it must be so difficult to know what to do in that situation. Like, how can you continue your life as normal when something like that's going on? How can you go to work? How can you socialize with friends? You can't. It just all must stop.
The horror that you're living with every single day, that your daughter might do something to really harm her, I mean, end her life. I mean, it was just horrendous to hear her. What a brave woman. And I think actually, you know, as I said at the beginning of the podcast, we haven't been able to stop thinking about Suzanne. We haven't been able to stop thinking about Izzy, her daughter. We haven't been able to kind of get our minds out of the fact that it might happen to us. And what would we do? How would we be able to support our kids? Bullying is the worst thing in the world. And I think, you know, hopefully maybe having Suzanne and her network and her community, the charity, as you know, as somebody there to really try and understand and help you, maybe that's a bit of comfort. I mean, I really think it is. I'm like, I feel compelled to reach out to her again, George, because we bumped into her, didn't we? Weirdly, we were talking about her, and there she was at this event.
It was so
that
weird.
We were like, we want to work with you. We want to help. So I don't think it's going to be the last that we hear of Suzanne. She's She's amazing.
No, absolutely not. It's not going to be. And do like check out her book and her charity as well. The book's called Never Let Go, How to Parent Your Child Through Mental Illness. So definitely worth a read or to pass it on to someone who you think might need it.
Exactly. Right, we need to get going. So before we go, please, 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 as always, if you could give the podcast a little follow, if you have time to leave a review, that would really help us as well. And subscribe to it as well so that you don't miss an episode.
Yeah, and any feedback, anything you want to chat to us about, then do please just drop us a message on Instagram. We're on at Made by Mummers, and we'll be back on Friday. Made by Mummers is an Insanity podcast production, and today's episode was produced by the lovely Charlotte Mason.
Insanity Group.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.